This podcast is part of a series commissioned by the International Society for Frontotemporal Dementias as a part of the 11th Conference for Frontotemporal Dementias held during November 2018 in Sydney, Australia. In this edition, we speak to Professor Amy Brotman, co-theme head for dementia for Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health based in Australia. Professor Brotman spoke on biomarkers for clinical trials in FTD.
So my name's Amy Brotman. I'm a neurologist and clinician researcher in Melbourne, Australia. I am affiliated with the Florey Institute for Neuroscience and Mental Health, as well as the Melbourne Dementia Research Centre. And I have clinics at three hospitals in Melbourne, at the Box Hill Hospital, which was my earliest one, the Eastern Cognitive Disorders Clinic, and also at Melbourne Health, Royal Melbourne Hospital, and Austin Health.
So could you give us a little bit of a background on your talk on biomarkers in frontal temporal lobe dementia?
Sure. So my talk followed Adam Box's talk, and Adam's a renowned scientist and really led clinical trials in frontotemporal dementia, and he's based in San Francisco, and he was briefed to talk largely about clinical trials in people with genetic or familial frontotemporal dementia. And these are based on a whole pile of studies where people have been followed with genes looking for when they convert from being without symptoms, asymptomatic, to being symptomatic. So one of the things about these studies is that they're trying to pinpoint when people are converting and therefore give drugs just before that. Hugely important and really important for how we're going to think about these families. My topic was talking about sporadic frontotemporal dementia, which is 70% of the people that we see. People who've just been diagnosed and come to see us in clinic. And one of the problems about that is that they've often got very severe deficits when they're diagnosed. They've often got a lot of brain shrinkage or atrophy on their brain scan, and they've often had a lot of social and personal and financial stress because of the symptoms that they've had without diagnosis. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how we use clinically meaningful markers to as our outcome measures and also to detect change, whether or not the drugs might actually be working.
I guess the question that I really need to ask now is, why is there such a delineation, a very clear delineation between the 30% that get familial and genetic frontal temporal lobe dementia and the 70% that don't?
I wish we knew. I think that it's still a huge question, and it's an area that there's been so many areas that are screaming out for more research in this field. There's some researchers who think that it's all genetic and we haven't found the genes yet. I don't think that's true. I think that there's going to be a genetic predisposition for some people, but there's also going to be a variety of risk factors, which some of which have been identified. And just like we used to think of Alzheimer's disease as a genetic disease, but now we know that about only 7% of your risk is actually genetic in Alzheimer's. I think that this will be the case with FTD, but we need to do more research about what are the potential combination of risk factors for sporadic frontotemporal dementia.
And you'd said some of those have already been identified. What are they?
They have identified vascular risk factors, surprisingly, is the only one that's really come out. There's been some great work done by a group in Italy, Baroni, and there's been some other work that's been done. The problem is that because this is a rare disease, like many rare diseases, a lot of the studies have been focused on quite small groups. So there was interest in whether pesticides were associated with MND and FTD, and that's been discounted. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of small associations get pressed and then get discounted. So we've got a lot to learn.
Looking at biomarkers then, where are we with those?
I think we're in the best place that we've been, in the sense that I think we've now got both imaging and potentially blood biomarkers that will be useful. In imaging, a lot of my talk was fairly scientific because I was talking about advances in our ways of imaging grey and white matter and how we can use particularly new advanced imaging metrics that we can derive that will reduce our sample sizes, the number of people that we need to have in a study, and reduce and also be very sensitive to change. This is based on work that's been done around the world. It's been done based on some work done at the Florey. One of my PhD students, Rumika Mito, has working with Tess Dolander, and Alan Connolly has done some beautiful white matter work, and I spoke a bit about that, as well as ways of measuring changes in certain volumes of the brain. The other thing that's quite exciting in the literature now is some blood biomarkers. We've only measured biomarkers in CSF. The problem with that is that there's a lot of variability. Everybody's slightly different. And also, we can't necessarily guarantee that they'll change over time, because you can change day to day anyway. It's this retest reliability. We've now know that some of the proteins can be detected in the blood, and there's a particular protein called neurofilament. That's what it's called. It's got a bad name, neurofilament light, which reflects mainly damage to the connections of the brain, and it's been shown to be useful in multiple sclerosis, in detecting change, in detecting clinical progression. And there's now some good work, and in fact in some abstracts presented afterwards, some good work that this actually might be good. So I think we've got a combination. We've also got better measures to detect functional change.
So I know that there are a specific, the tau protein is sort of what connects...
some of them, yes.
Some of them. So then you talk about things like MS, and then we're talking about MND, and frontal temporal lobe dementia seems to sit within a spectrum. Mm. Is it a spectrum of diseases we don't understand that have some correlations?
Oh, look, absolutely. I mean, it's not probably associated with MS at all, except that there's an enormous amount of inflammation that occurs particularly early on in the disease. And again, there was some great work that was presented at the meeting showing that there is almost like a rim of inflammation around where the atrophy has occurred. So the atrophy is evidence of burnt out damage, and in fact the analogy was like a fire front. There's sort of the scarring and the fire, the sort of charring left behind, and then there's a fire front. So there is that association with MND. The protein, which is that TDP43, which is a different protein to tau, that's what links it. But I think that there was some work that was also presented about a mutation that we know that in people, when you've got one copy of the mutation, causes frontotemporal dementia, and there was a lot of work presented again at the meeting. But that there's been a case report of a family that had the two mutations, both the parents had the gene, they gave it to their children, tragically, and the children ended up having a completely different presentation with epilepsy and eye and retinal problems that we would never have seen normally, and it's only been described in the epilepsy literature. Absolutely fascinating study from Melbourne, actually. John Damiano was one of the authors on it, and Sam Berkovic was too.
So it seems like there are some connections, but we just don't know what they are.
I think that's true.
Because that's important for patients, isn't it? Because
yes.
I know a lot of patient discussion is about it's like this, or it's like this, or it's related to this, or it's similar to Alzheimer's, or
yes,
it's not similar because of this. Or
yeah.
And I know that that's a point of confusion, so
yep,
it would be interesting to see how quickly that moves. It feels like there's a whole bunch of puzzle pieces that once they all come together, we'll have this understanding of all of these diseases.
Mm.
How far away is that puzzle piece?
I think it's, if you had a, I mean, I think I started going to these meetings 10 or 12 years ago, and then it felt a long way away, a really long way away. And then we were really focused on actually understanding how to describe so we could diagnose it. And I think that as a community, due to lots of fabulous work, the FTD community has nailed that. I think we can diagnose it now. I think we're probably 5 years away, and I think that potentially we will actually have some results of some intervention studies even earlier. Again, a lot of the work that's being done by UCSF, the Bluefield project that funded a few of the sessions, they're doing some remarkable work coming from these families with this mutation, in fact this granular mutation, but using it on the broader FTD community. So I'm hopeful.
You've been listening to a podcast interview with Professor Amy Brotman, co-theme head of dementia for Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health in Australia. Professor Brotman spoke on biomarkers for clinical trials in FTD at the 11th Conference for Frontotemporal Dementias held during November 2018 in Sydney, Australia. This podcast is one of a series commissioned by the conference organisers to augment the conference content. The International Society for Frontotemporal Dementias is a non-profit scientific society with a focus on understanding all aspects of frontotemporal dementias. Members include leaders in FTD research around the world, and the society is associated with a large international biannual meeting presenting the latest findings. We welcome new members and offer several levels of membership associated with where you are in your career. Membership includes updates on the latest discoveries in the FTD field, discounted registration at the biannual meeting, and a special journal issue focused on FTD. The science in the field of neurodegenerative disease and frontotemporal dementia in particular is racing ahead, and potential treatments are being developed and tested. We welcome your participation in ISFTD to keep advancing this vibrant field. We look forward to serving you as a new member and helping to push forward the science in this important area. To learn more about ISFTD membership, please visit www.isftd.org.